We have Parsha Va'era, right? Got the 10 plagues. Everybody loves plagues. We just sort of bought a whole box of animals for Arov and a whole box of little plastic frogs for students. And we all know that Rabbi Yehuda has a mnemonic for them, right? We all know Rabbi Yehuda, Yotzein Behem Simanim, Detzach, Adash, Ba'achah, those three groups. And people say that a lot about these sorts of things, but one way to look at it is what does this mnemonic mean? And one way is that these three different sets of plagues have a different pedagogical purpose, right? And Hashem tells Moshe before each of the three, in the Dam, the Arav, and the Barad, tells him what's going to happen. Before Makadami says, "Komar Hashem, b'zot teda k'ni Hashem." Okay, you shall know that I am God. That the former Arav, since he fled Eretz Goshen, and I will separate out Goshen. There won't be Arav there. Leman teda ki ani Hashem bekerav haaretz. One is ani Hashem. This is ani Hashem bekerav haaretz. Before Machat Barad, it's ani shalech chomeg. This is the end series of the Makot. Bavur teda ki ein kamoni b'chol haaretz. There's none like me in the land. Okay, kind of this escalating series of lists. You're going to know that I'm God. You know that I'm God on earth. You know that there's no, I am God on earth, and there's none other like in my power in the earth, right? In my power on the. I'm going to look at that first set, right? B'zot teda k'ni Hashem, right? That's about demonstrating that Hashem exists. And Paro initially denied this when Moshe comes to Paro. Paro, mi Hashem asher ashma b'kolo. Or asked, "Who's God that I should listen to? L'shloch l'Yisrael to let Israel go." Lo yadati Hashem. I never heard of this God, right? I got a whole list of whole pantheon of gods here. There's no Hashem. There's no Elokei Avrim. Gam Yisrael shleich. So I'm definitely not saying them out. And the way Hashem does is these three plagues are basically showing that the other gods don't exist. These things that you have things are gods. They're not real. Okay. Hashem starts with the Nile, which was worshipped as a god. And Rashi makes the point that the Nile turns to blood, nefchu adam, l'fi she'ein negashamim yordim Mitzrayim, because there's no rainfall in Egypt, the nilus oleo mashkeata aretz. Who knows, the Nile overflows every fall, waters the land, and Mitzrayim odim l'nil. So the Egyptians worship the Nile, l'fivchach hulkat yiratam, therefore Hashem attacks that which they feared. Okay, so the idea is that the Nile is the lifeblood of Egypt. So Hashem ironically takes that literal. Fine, I'll show you lifeblood here. It's all blood. Otherwise, the Nile and all it symbolizes. The next plague deals with Paro. Right? Paro claims to be a god as well. I am the one who controls the Nile, and he's symbolized specifically by the Nile crocodile. Nile crocodile is a massive 9-foot man-eating monster, and Yechezkel brings this up explicitly when he's his nevuah to Egypt. The bear Ramata, Hashem tells Yechezkel, go to say Kor Marshal Kim. This is what God says: Hinei alecha Paro Melech Mitzrayim. I am unto you, Paro, king of Egypt. Atanim gadol, the great crocodile who waits betochi Arav, who crouches in his river. Asher Amar Li Yorei, you are the one who says, this is my river, Bani HaSetani, and I created it. I'm in control of it. And that's what Tzfardea is. We think of frogs as cute and harmless, right? And we have a little song, he had frogs in his bed, and frogs in his head, and frogs in his nose, frogs in his toes. And it's one we always sing to the kids because it's obviously the most benign of all the plagues. And we have the little frogs, little hopping frogs you drop into the salt water and the Seder. But that's really a mistranslation of Tzfardea, not just frog. Okay, it's a whole series of amphibious animals. And Tehillim makes that clear when it talks about the plagues. That Hashem set his signs in Egypt, Maftav, Bistay, and so on, and his wonders in the fields of Soan, city of Egypt. We have poch l'dam yoraihem and turn the river to blood, and Nizelehem ba'al yeshutun, and they could not drink from its streams. Yes, Yishlach b'hem arov v'yochlem. He sent the arov, the wild animals, and ate them. Utzfardeya v'tashchitem. He sent the tzfardeya and destroyed them. It's a dangerous tzfardeya. Includes dangerous things. The Emek Dabar puts it explicitly. So the Nitziv is in Russia. So, but see if you recognize his Russian word he uses here. Yadua, Mefarshim, Rishonim. And everyone knows that there are different opinions among the original Mefarshim, Zochrein Lebachrein Lebacha. If the Sfardeya was that the kind of animal that's well known, Hamashchit, the destructive animal, Hanimsa od Hayom b'Yaor, that's still present in the Nile today, the Nikra crocodile. Okay, that's called a crocodile. Or the kind of animals found in rivers, the tsoakim and or the croaking animals that we know today. We'll see the Perishim met, and obviously it was a crocodiles or frogs. The answer is yes. It was about all of those things he points out, and he says that's why they're kind of treated differently in the Pasuk. So this is the way of Hashem ironically destroying the gods of Egypt. You think you're the mighty crocodile, I'll show you real crocodiles. In your house, you'll have a real crocodile on the throne there. This is dangerous. So we're gonna have, that's lesson number two. Paro, you're not a god. The last one is one I want to look at. That's Keenan, lice. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics has always said that lice are not dangerous. You should never kick a kid out of school for lice. And no one has ever listened to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Like, no one trusts pediatricians on this. So they say, ah, there's a lice, and the whole school shuts down. You can't go to school until you open up. They say, no, don't send them home that night, treat it, and then go back to school the next day. It's not such a terrible. Though in Israel, no one worries about lice at all. But specifically here, these kinim are not directed at the Egyptian gods. Now, here's the story of kinim. Moshe. Hashem tells Moshe, Amor Aaron, go tell Aaron, Ted Matcha, go lift up your staff, and go hit the ground. And there will be lice throughout Egypt. Lest you can. So they did that. So Aaron raised his hand with the staff, and hit the land, and the lice teamed in people and in animals, all the dust of the earth became lice, the triangle of Egypt. And the Egyptians did the same with their spells. They raised their staves, they hit the ground, said whatever magic word you're supposed to, lotzia kinim, in order to bring out these lice, and they couldn't. And as they're trying to make this happen, there are lice all over everybody, animals and people. So the magicians tell Paro, Etzba Elokim. This is the finger of God. Right? It's not magic anymore. But La Paro hardens his heart, and didn't listen to them. He's still not going to set them free, despite what the Chartumim's concession, because this was a plague and not aimed not at the gods of Egypt, but those who claim to be able to manipulate the gods. That's what Chartumim are. They are theurges, which is a nice term, which means the art of compelling God or supernatural powers to do or refrain from doing something. The theurgy, that's what Chartumim are. And we've seen Chartumim throughout the story. Every plague starts out with the Chartumim by Dam, by Asukena Chartumim, Bilatehem, that the Chartumim did the same thing in terms of bringing the blood with their Blatehem in their with their spells, and they made blood. And then Paro didn't listen to them in Israel. And similarly, by Tzfardeya, Asukena Chartumim, Bilatehem, and the magicians did the same with their spells. And then they brought forth more frogs in Egypt. So the magicians could replicate the first two plagues. So Paro says, okay, obviously you're just magic, but I got plenty of my own magicians. And what this power, with Chartumim specifically, why I'm calling it theurgy of manipulating these supernatural powers, is that's from the Gemara. That's Rashi quotes this. Latehem. What is a lot? What are lot? Rashi translate lachash, a spell. Sheomri moto balatu v'chashai, that you say quietly. Rotena amru balatehem is maseh shedim. They were manipulating shedim, demons. Whatever that means. What's a shed? What are these chartumim doing? Usually translated as necromancers, right? Who pull up the, do magic with the dead. But this is an interesting essay from Rav Lichtenstein called Al Kedusha Tara, how we understand Kedusha and what Tara means in the world, that shedim are part of the way we look at the world. It says there are invisible forces that affect us always. Right. We know that too, but we give them names like bacteria, we talk about physical forces. They would put them as kind of invisible thinking beings, and the fact that we can actually control them. If we understood
And
them, we didn't what?
negative.
Are negative, right? These forces of negative energy. But the fact that we can control, we understand them well enough, we can learn how to manipulate them, and we can hack the universe. This is Rav Lichtenstein, okay. Therefore, nidmeh shehagisha hayudit. So it seems that the approach, the viewpoint, the Jewish viewpoint, shoneh mishtei hagishot hanefutzot ba'olam, is different from two different widespread points of view in the world. Hagisha masit, lomar hamagit, for the practical, which you try, the magical point of view, hagisha madi'in, the scientific point of view. They
What
said
was
they're
the
different.
first one?
He calls that the ma'agit, the magical. Right?
Ma'asit is
Ma'asit, I think,
magical.
is, well, that's what he's saying, that the ma'asit in the sense he's using, in the sense that you can do things with it, right? I can utter magical spells and control it.
Oh.
Okay? Practical Kabbalah kinds of things. Agisha ma'asit to'enet, the ma'asit, I'm going to translate that as magical, because that's what he does it. Hold, she omnom yesh ba'olam kochot kushav tuma, says there are holy, there right, they're negative, there's negative powers, positive powers. Lomudubar ba'kochot kamayim. We're talking about forces that existed, primordial forces that existed in nature. They're shedim. Ruchot ra'ot kadomeh, right? That's the shedim, the magical way of point of view. The thing gishazu, from this point of view, kochot tuma inam notrim al yedei hadam. That Tuma is something independent of our own actions. Now, his point in the lecture is that Judaism sees Tuma and Kedusha as something that's created by people. But here we say, no, that there are these forces and that simply exist. El Nivru b'yachad imateva, that are part of nature. The Shedim are part of the created world. Umaki shazu, and opposed to this viewpoint, Hagisha Madait rationalit, that's a scientific rational point of view, there's no such powers as these. There's no such thing as holiness. There's no places that are holy, that there are no such distinctions. It starts out
So
there.
what's the Jewish way?
That Kedusha and Tumah exist, but they're created by human beings.
That shadim are not. We don't.
Okay, so how does he talk about shade? He's not denying that the Gemara story talks about shadim, but in terms of how we relate to Kedusha and Tahara and Tuma and Chol, is in terms of what that Rosenstein is saying, is in terms of how the things that we do in the world. But I mostly want to point out.
Aren't there like some halachot that actually like tefillat kelim? Doesn't that have to do with shadim?
I don't know that. I mean, the Torah
No.
doesn't say that explicitly. It just says you need to do it. The Gemara definitely talks about Shadim a lot. I think here you're specifically reading these Chartumim as manipulating Shadim. And so there's an Isser in Judaism of doing that, and whether you consider like the Rambam that, well, it's not real. and you're denying Hashem's power by doing by trying to manipulate them, or your whole like Ramban that they're real, but it's us to do it. That's a separate thing.
So some, yeah, I'm lost.
Yeah.
Tell me again. He says there are two approaches to the world,
Of
and
looking at this idea of Tumah and Tahara, of this sort of negative and positive spiritual levels of the world. And he's saying that the scientific denies any of that. There's no moral value in things. And the magical thinking is that those exist, but they're independent of human beings. And those are they're demons out there. They're inherently evil.
Oh, and we don't hold from that.
And I think
The
he would
Jewish
say that,
approach.
right? He would say that no, we create those positive and negative forces in the universe. The Kedusha is real. It's something that we create.
Okay.
It's not necessarily, but what I'm not pushing that because I want us to see this Chartumim idea is that we have there exist these negative forces in the world. That's the
Yeah.
magical thinking. Okay. And I would argue that the scientific approach is very similar to that, except we don't call it magic, we call it science. And we still there are forces in the world and we figure them out, can use them for ourselves. Okay. And that's unquestionably true, right? I am talking to you. How far away? 4,000 miles away? Okay, that clearly is magic. I have a magic mirror in front of me that I press the right little buttons over here in the right order, and poof, it happens. And that's Clark's law, right? Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Right. You couldn't
It's
tell the
funny,
difference.
isn't it? Because we always think the opposite of science is magic, opposites.
I
But
know, but
it's
I'm arguing
not.
that in fact they are
Right.
not. From
It's
the
the
point
same
of view
thing.
of me as the user, they're
Yeah.
indistinguishable, right? You're right. The attitude toward them is different.
Just the words, magic and science, the opposites, but no.
In terms of what I do with them, you know, it makes no difference to me. I don't know how my computer works.
Right.
Faith that does not involve demons. Do I know
Yeah.
that? No. Can I tell you what a liquid crystal display actually is? It's not, you know, the blood of goats that sacrificed at a full moon. I don't know. I can't say that again. So, you know, the idea of not believing in magic is a matter of my attitude toward it. But still,
Yeah.
that the same. So that you know, that we kind of mock this idea that Chartumim manipulating the Shadim is still very much the way we look at the world too. That we can run it, right? It's a technique. That Maaseh Shedim, Chartumim are is a technological approach to the world, right? Shedim exists, and I got to figure out how to hack them. I can do that. Okay, and I can, you know, God's going to make their turn water into blood, and I can do the same thing. And me, you know, that the normal person looking at this happening, I have no idea. I don't know how an air conditioner works. I'm hot. I press a button on a wall, and I'm cool. That's clearly is magic, right? I mean, that's clearly is
Right.
okay, but the same thing. So I, you know, it's like, okay, we need to bring frogs. Okay, I'm gonna spray pheromones into the air. The frogs are coming out. But what happens to Makakinium? Kinium, they said the Chartumim did it and they couldn't. The way Rashi puts it is, Shein because they're doing these Maaseh Shedim, they're trying to manipulate these primordial forces in the universe. But in a sholit ala bria pchuta mikesara, because the shadim can't control anything smaller than a barley.
Then a what? Oh.
A barley grain, okay? Which is a very weird thing. Which is why what got me thinking about that. This is the one Rashi here that got me thinking. I want to figure that out because I've never understood that. What is that, right? And this is the Gur-Aryeh says, you know what a kisaora is, the size of a barley corn is. It's the
No.
smallest halakhically defined size.
You mean like a kazayit and blah blah,
Right,
and this
right.
is a kisaora.
A kisaora, right? That is the smallest thing that exists halakhically. You know, in terms of I have to worry about it in terms of tumah and things like that. Okay, so a shade can't control small things. Why? And says the Gur-Aryeh says, "Devar shehu kisaora, something as big as a barley corn, yesh bo mamash ba'atzmo. It has its own independent reality. Again, halakhically speaking, I mean, I can see things that are smaller than that, but in terms of do I care about halakhically, that's the minimum size. But shed shogat alav, so therefore these shedi forces are upon it, can act upon it. Well, someone smaller than that, who batel it's a klal ha'olam. It's just part of the general fabric of the universe. You know, klal ha'olam, and the shed is it can't control that. Nizik nikra. Okay, so he's going to make a pun here. Nikra se'ora, milashon shi'ur. Okay, not a se'or, barley, but a shi'ur, a measurement. Okay, that's the minimum measurement. Shadavazir nikra shi'ur. Less than that is not something measurable. Right? Your scientific instruments can't measure anything smaller than that. Mikeban delo nikra shi'ur, since it doesn't have any real measurement, but the lights of klal olam, it's but it's part of the great fabric universe, nothing can manipulate independently. That there are limits to what your technological power can do. The lessons of Zotei Dakni Hashem, right? I'm going to teach you that you know that I am God, because I'm going to show you what things that are not God, right? The physical things, the Nile, you say that can be God? The answer is nope. And I should bring out the Exploding Kittens game, which you've probably never heard of. But it's a weird game, but there are nope cards that you play. If someone tries to play something on you, if you have a nope card in your hand, you can play a nope. Can't do that. You can't take my cards or
Oh,
whatever.
nope.
You got a nope, right? So that's Hashem playing the nope card on that, right? Human beings, power, you think you're a God? Nope, playing the nope card, right? Human beings can control gods, your chatumim, nope. There's only one God, and there are limits to what the force that human beings can control, what they can do, right? Kesorah is the Planck length of the universe.
Okay, what's a Planck length?
Obviously, you're going to ask what a Planck. Let me go.
It's a wave, the wave of
It's a quantum mechanical
quantum.
idea, so it's going to be a quantum mechanical metaphor, so I don't particularly like what I mean, sorry. There we go. Okay, so the Planck length, which is 1.6 to negative 10 to negative 35 meters, okay, it's really tiny. It's not so much the smallest possible length, it's the smallest measurable length. Because we have the Heisenberg uncertainty principle that things do not have a defined position and velocity at the same time. So this is the degree to which measuring the position of any object in the most accurate way physically possible with a single photon creates uncertainty in the new position. You can't measure anything less than that. Less than that has no reality in the measurable universe. Okay, it's obviously a lot smaller than a seora, but it's the same idea, that there are limitations to the things and the way we understand the universe. That's a shade cannot control anything less than a seora. Okay, so they say, that's what they say, it's etzba Elohim. This is the finger of God, saying that this is the limitation of the chartumim in the face of Hashem's fine motor skills. Not Yad Elohim, but the fingers, right? God has fine motor skills than we do. We control smaller things. Okay, there are limits to what chartumim can do. And there's a great Tehillim when it talks about Ma Enosh Ki Yitzkareinu Karenu. What is man that you consider him, right? That starts out, the idea that creation is the work of your fingers specifically. The one you set up the moon, the stars, and then ma'anosh kiskarana. Then in the face of your fingers, then what is man that you remember him, ben adam ki kipdeno, or human beings that you pay attention to? We know that puzzle. So they, as it were, you're experiencing the Yirat Hashem, this awe of God's power, being our own limitations, not in the infinite expanse of the universe, but in the infinitesimal. There are things too small, too fine for us to manipulate.
And this is Keenan.
That's Keenan. That the Kartumim are faced with the fact that things that are, it's not infinitely far away. It's right here, there, but still too fine. We can't do anything. That Hashem is there in the infinitesimal great William Blake poem to see the world in a grain of sand, an eternity in an hour. And its ability to see, to have our yira is there. So that's what Hashem is teaching the heart to man, okay? That your gods are not gods, you human beings are not gods, and you can't manipulate God in creation of the universe. And that's that first lesson of Laman Teda Ki Ani Hashem. And next, he goes on to the next part of the lesson, which is Laman Teda Ki Ani Hashem B'Kerav Haaretz. That's Arov and Deber, and then Shekhin. But that's for another time. I'm going to stop here.
And then the other plagues they can't do either, right? But this is the
After
first
that,
one.
they don't even have anything to say.
They don't try. Yeah.
They don't try, right? We see them again at Shekhin, where they're plagued by boils, but not that they tried to do it, but just that they were affected by boils as well exclusively. But right, we don't see after this, they don't try to do it again, right? First two, they do it and it happens. Shtaradeya, they do it and it happens. Kinim, they do all the tricks, but nothing happens. And that's the end. And I'm going to stop here.
So